You are flying high on Locked On Eagles, your source for the best Philadelphia Eagles news and analysis, brought to you by LockedOnEagles.com. I am your host, Michael Kist. You can follow my work at Inside the Pylon, Breaking Football. You can follow me on Twitter at MichaelKistNFL. As always, I'm joined by the best co-host in the game, Mr. 7 Years to Week Without a Bad Day. He is Benjamin Solak of Bleeding Green Nation and NDT Scouting. You can follow him on Twitter at Benjamin Solak. That's S-O-L-A-K. Ben, got a win today, man. How you doing?
I'm doing very well, Michael. Thank you for asking. I'm wearing my Eagles Santa hat. I can't tell if you can see. But yeah, so that was the attire for today, getting into the seasonal spirit. I'm very excited about that. That's good stuff. Very, very stressful experience there.
It was a heart pounder. Yeah.
Philadelphia. I enjoyed the Giants going down the field and scoring, and then the Eagles on the ensuing drive there against the Giants, 7-6 for Philadelphia. And then the Giants go down, they score again, Eagles have to punt, Giants score, it's 20-7. And at that point was when the Eagles are one and done in the playoffs. They're not going to win a game for the rest of the season. Jim Schwartz will not get any head coaching consideration. That's when the takes started to fly, Mike. That's when despair hit. Philadelphia went 11-2 across the first 13 weeks of the season, and in the 14th game of a 16-game season, they went down by 13 early in the second quarter against a vastly inferior opponent, and the season was already lost.
All right.
So that was my favorite part of the game. I'm new to Twitter, right? And so I've really never experienced the other side of like crazy groupthink overreaction. I've just experienced positive Eagle overreaction, right? As far as like, we're winning, everything is great, Carson for MVP, Eagles going to the Super Bowl, blah. I've never seen this ugly side of Philadelphia Twitter, and my oh my, is it fearsome. It's something else. I kind of said, there's three quarters left. Offense is playing well. Defense will tie things up. You can't, this is like an important teaching note. This will get us more into the film. So this isn't just me rambling now. The Giants ran for their first three drives a very nickel and dime offense. You know, a lot of slants. The slants were a big topic of conversation for the broadcasters and for the fans alike. No huddle, up-tempo sort of stuff. Philadelphia fans should know that you cannot sustainably win games with that offensive style. And they should know this because it's not directly analogous, but because of the Chip Kelly era.
Chip Kelly,
right?
Yeah, exactly.
You cannot play for four quarters doing exclusively that. You just can't do it in the NFL. It can't be pulled off. And so the Giants did that successfully for three drives. Then all of a sudden, there was a punt. There was an interception. There was a blocked punt. They got a field goal to end the half, right? And then coming back out, they were able to pick up a touchdown early, but they only scored on one of their final five drives there in the second half, right? So Jim Schwartz had a bad game plan going in. Jim Schwartz is perfectly fine letting the Giants get some of that. Now, I think they got a little bit too much and they hit on a couple of sluggos that they wouldn't have liked to. Absolutely. I think the secondary played poor and we'll get into that. But you watch those three drives, you start freaking out. No team has ever sustained that offense before, ever. It can't be done.
Yeah.
Calm down, Philadelphia. Things are going to be bumpy sometimes. It's okay. Came out with the W.
Yeah, and we're going to get into the coverage and everything like that. So just to recap the whole thing here, 34-29 is your final score for the Eagles. Fun fact for you, Ben. The last time a team in a single game blocked a field goal, blocked an extra point, and blocked a punt was the 1991 Buffalo Bills. They went to the Super Bowl. So book your tickets now, because that's obviously, you know, that's what's going to happen. So also, look, this is the worst passing performance that the Eagles have allowed, 434 yards. Last three games, they've either allowed right at a 100 QB rating or above. They definitely struggled there. I thought there were changes that they made after they went down 20-7, especially to help the outside corners with the slants, with dropping zones underneath, that helped them prevent some of that. Because like you said, you know, okay, that's what you want to do. We're going to give that up at first, and we're just going to be sure tacklers, and we're going to break on it and everything like that. Then they hit the sluggos, which, by the way, if you go to LockedOnEagles.com, go under the Eagles evaluations tab or the player evaluations tab, and you look at my Ronald Darby report, me and Ben have talked about it too. That's kind of his bugaboo. He's got a very strong game. He falls for those sluggos, those double move type deals. Same thing with Jalen Mills, and they got him on a couple of them, and we were down early, and this team had to rally and they had to answer. And Nick Foles on the day, 24-38, 237, 4 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, outside of the Olivier Vernon sack where he clubbed Halapuli Vaiti Vaitai and got a strip sack on Foles. I thought Foles did a fantastic job of running the offense, taking care of the football, being responsible with it, but also making plays when he needed to, especially in the red zone. It was a little slow on third down conversions to start the game, and we went down because of it. Well, not necessarily because of it. He can't play defense, but we went down because we weren't able to sustain some drives as well. And then that kind of righted itself later in the game. So I thought Foles played fantastically, and it reminded me more of the 2013 Foles than any other Foles that I've seen. We were getting the ball out quick. We ran the ball 25 times, even though we threw it 38. I mean, we were down, so I get that script is going to change things like that. But yeah, man, the defense was the big concern for me. In coverage, really undisciplined play. There were penalties early on the defense. Jernigan had one. Barnett had one. Jalen Mills got called for a couple of holding calls.
Yeah.
Overall, a very up and down game. There were struggles all over the place, but hey, we struggled. We got plays in different facets of the game when we needed it. Darby had an interception.
That was big.
And we got the W. You don't go an entire season without having a tough W like this, especially on the road with a divisional opponent. And I don't care how bad the Giants are. So, I mean, I think it was a solid win, and it earned us a first round bye. So, I mean, that's a victory for us.
Absolutely. And we should definitely talk about the defense. I want to give you a little bit of trivia. Quick, put you on the spot first, Mike. 434 yards was the number, I believe, for Eli Manning. Yes, it was. That's the second most ever given up through the air by Philadelphia. You have one guess, 5 seconds. Who threw the most yards in a single game against the Eagles? 5, 4, 3.
Charlie Whitehurst.
It was John Kitna. So essentially Charlie Whitehurst, yes. John Kitna with the Lions put up 446 yards against Philadelphia. And they lost the game, too. The Eagles, like, blew them out. The Eagles destroyed them or something. But Kitna threw for, like, 446 yards in garbage time, which is absurd.
The thing that concerns me about this one is this game was never in garbage time, which would lead to some of those passing yards. Eli was really getting at us, and we weren't able to get to him at first. But, man, did Brandon Graham come on in the second part of that game. Or the first quarter and a few minutes, game one. And then game two, we looked like a completely different team.
Absolutely. It was a 27-9 Philadelphia run after 20-7, obviously, right. Which, you know, sounds like that's a little duh because the Eagles ended up winning the game after being down 13. Yeah, you got to give a big shout out to special teams, of course. We'll get there. Let's talk about the defense. You're seeing the issues with the loss of Jordan Hicks. And you might say, how is Ronald Darby biting at slants aggressively the issue with Jordan Hicks being gone? Jordan Hicks out means that Nigel Bradham is dropping a lot less often into coverage than he was. From what I see, right? Bradham's
where he
used
excels.
A lot less in man coverage, right? Yeah, exactly. Which there are numbers, I'm sure, on that. We'll see after the game, you know, for Pro Football Focus, how many potential drops into coverage that Bradham had. But from what I can tell, Bradham just simply has to play more run responsibility. Makes sense. You know, Hicks is gone, and Joe Walker, I don't know if he was even active today or if he was still injured.
I didn't even see him. Yeah.
Yeah, he's obviously a huge step down from Hicks. So now you have a coverage responsibility for tight ends that you need and running backs that you need to be accounted for. So you move Malcolm Jenkins down. Malcolm Jenkins now down in the box, playing more of a linebacker, covering those tight end roles. Well, now you're seeing a lot more Rodney McLeod in single high coverage with corners in deep third responsibility, cover three or cover one. Again, Rodney McLeod is a single high, corners isolate on the islands. And if you're in cover two, then Corey Graham is back there. Mike, I'm here to tell you that Corey Graham is bad. Corey Graham is old. And he's savvy and he's smart, but he takes really, really bad angles. This is how I know he takes bad angles. He makes Rodney McLeod look like McLeod takes good angles, and McLeod takes bad angles, Mike. Mm-hmm. So we have not great angle taking by the safeties, and that's the first issue when it comes to tackling, right? If you don't take a good angle, you're putting yourself in a bad position to make a tackle. You put yourself in a bad position to make a tackle, it's easier to miss it, right? We've seen the struggle with making tackles for Philadelphia. All this goes to say, you lose that central cog in your defense in Hicks, now all of a sudden that defense, you have to account more and more for the interior, right? Bradham's moving inside. Jenkins is moving down to the box. Corners are being isolated. They're being asked to do more on the outside. Ronald Darby back from injury. Jalen Mills, obviously a second-year starter. Yeah, Darby, this was a great game to highlight Darby's weaknesses. He's aggressive. He's going to attack down, absolutely. Jalen Mills, I thought, had the worst game of the two. For corners, you only remember their bad plays, really. You occasionally remember their highlight ones, like the Darby interception. Darby played a sluggo in the near red zone when the Giants were threatening down by five perfectly. He played it perfectly. No one's going to remember that sluggo. Yeah. Everybody going to remember. And it was one he nearly picked off, right? Yeah. And everybody's like, why didn't he pick that off? Well, he played a difficult route in isolation coverage, great. Eli Manning threw a good ball and he got his paws on it. Would have been an amazing interception, but that's okay.
Yeah,
right? No one's going to remember that sluggo. Everybody going to remember the sluggo where he got burned badly on the first drive. Mills, to me, the biggest concern is Mills was asked to play up on wide receivers at the line of scrimmage. Rasul Douglas, third round rookie corner out of West Virginia, who excels playing tight to the line of scrimmage, was not active. Mills was asked to play where Douglas is the strongest, and Mills had two holding penalties. Mills was not playing well in that position. And so you really wonder why Douglas is inactive. It's very interesting to me that, you know, Sidney Jones was a no-go. Mills, P-Rob, obviously out with the concussion, and then Darby, those are three good corners. But I'm curious, if Schwartz had in the back of his mind, right, we might have to play press coverage if they're nickel and diming us, Rasul Douglas should have been active. He really should have, because that's where he excels. And it's a shame that they're not giving him those playing reps. That's something that I would definitely like to ask about. That's something that I wonder. But the moral of the story is you're seeing the Jordan Hicks effect here. You're seeing how that ripples down through the back end, the back seven of the defense. And Philadelphia's got to figure it out. Improved cornerback play, getting Sidney Jones maybe in there if he's physically ready, which, you know, that's a big question mark. Finding a way to get more help to the outside. You know, we had a Chuck's Marinan, one of our regular listeners, ask us, is there a way to get Jenkins out of the box? Is there a different way to cover these tight ends? Do you get Douglas down there to play against tight ends, you know, to play against bigger receivers in dime? And maybe that's something you have to look for, but they've got to figure out how to alleviate the stress on these outside corners, because New York put out a good blueprint out there over the two games they played as to how to attack this Philly pass defense.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. And when it comes to Mills, I mean, I understand why he's in the position that he is now. I mean, so you stand outside with no shoes on, you get bit by an ant, no big deal, right? Next day you get bit, no big deal. You step in an ant pile, okay, well, now it's a big deal. And I think the last 3 weeks, we're starting to see that more and more with Mills. And we talk about Mills' competitive toughness all the time. He puts the last play behind us, and he goes out and makes some plays. It's not an indictment of his game as a whole, but he's got his deficiencies as well. So it's going to be interesting to see how they treat Sidney Jones coming back, how they treat Rasul Douglas coming back, if that affects Jalen Mills moving forward, because, you know, he's going to have to match up with the Oakland Raiders wide receivers next week, and we're going to see how that goes coming into the playoffs as well. So it'll be interesting with that. Just a reminder, guys. Guys, go to the Locked On Eagles iTunes page if that's where you're getting us. Give us 5 stars, leave a review with your Twitter handle, and we will enter you to win a free Pro Football Focus Edge subscription. It is a $40 value, and I can't recommend it enough. So let's take a look at this game. Just some of the bigger takeaways here. I mentioned third down conversions before. We were 6 for 13 for 46%. Pretty solid. We started off 0 for 2, so really after that we were 6 for 11, so it righted the ship. The Giants converting 55% of their third downs was definitely not optimal, but here's the big one for me, red zone, right? Red zone efficiency, 4 for 6, 66%, which is excellent. That's where we want to be at the very least. I think we're a little bit higher than that on the year. I'll have to check that out. You saw the concepts that we ran inside the red zone. It was exactly what we've done this entire year. There was nothing different. Get Ertz isolated on a good matchup via alignment with, you know, three tight end sets. Don't overly rely on the run game on second down when you're outside of the five, which you discovered the other day is a terrible, terrible idea for a team to do, because, you know, you don't convert in those situations and you set yourself up for failure. Again, very, very similar to what we've seen from this team in the red zone. The drop off really wasn't there. And I'll tell you this, I looked at, so, and I understand this is 4 years ago. I'm not making a one-for-one comparison, and there's other stats out there as well. 2013 Foles, 2017 Wentz, you put them side by side, you really don't see much of a difference. The biggest difference for me is the sack rate. And I think we mitigated some of that today by designing plays where we could get the ball out of Foles' hand very quickly. I thought he played a fantastic game. What did you feel about his game overall?
Yeah, excited. You got to be excited. That was a 4 touchdown, 0 interception, 1 strip sack, but thank God Kenyon Barner was there. Performance. And for Foles, I mean, 2 touchdowns and no turnovers would have been perfectly fine. Like, all right, great. You know, maybe you're running the ball a little bit more in the red zone. The amount of trust they showed in him to execute their red zone concepts was awesome. And I'll beat the dead horse. To me, it just goes back to Doug Peterson being a fantastic coach. That Trey Burton touchdown was a perfect little slot fade rub concept, right? Which looked exactly like an RPO that Philadelphia is running probably every single game this year. And then Burton leaks out outside, little ghost screen. OJ Howard against Clemson in the national championship is what the play was. Great sequencing. You're wondering why DRC, Roger Scamardi, took the cheese so hard. It's because he's seen that play on film 10 times. He thought he had a pick. And he, you know, he just left his zone. It was beautiful stuff. But that's my love for Peterson. Foles, I was most impressed with him on the move. And Philadelphia had to move him around a lot because Chance Warmack was there starting at left guard, Big V at left tackle. Like you said, Big V gave up that one big sack that ended up being a strip sack. But really, left side of the line acquitted themselves decently. Right side of the line did a fantastic job as per usual. Foles moving out to his right very, very frequently, delivering much better of a ball on the move than I'm used to seeing him. Early one to Aguilar, which was fantastic. A tight window throw to Zach Ertz. And remember, when you're moving to the right, oftentimes, you know, you're not throwing to the right. You end up throwing to the middle of the field, kind of still across your body, right? Difficult throws to make, fantastic stuff. I was so impressed by Foles' ability to throw on the move, which is huge. Being able to move the pocket for a guy that really struggles with pressure is fantastic. Felt very comfortable in the offense. You saw, in my opinion, fewer full field read plays where you have a straight drop back and you scan it from left to right, right to left, going up, going down, and more half field read plays. You know, maybe it's a play action look, maybe it's one of those rollouts, and then he's just got a vertical read, right? That means that Foles doesn't have to swivel his head. He doesn't have to be looking left to right, which is good because he really struggles. He goes through those progressions quite slowly. That was really good, you know, understanding the personnel, understanding how to deploy the players. What I loved, and this is my favorite thing, how about 10 targets for Alshon Jeffrey, 9 for Zach Ertz, 9 for Nelson Agholor. We talked about, oh, he's going to need to develop chemistry and he's going to, you know, Matt Collins is going to get more. Matt Collins had one target. They went to the well, to their best 3 playmakers, all of whom have more than 8 receiving touchdowns this year. 10, 9, and 9. Agholor had the most productive day. You know, Alshon had the powerful day. He had the early touchdown, great reception. Zach Ertz was the safety blanket. They did not have to change who made the plays because there was a different quarterback in. Foles picked up right where Wentz left off as far as coordinating with his receivers, delivering catchable balls, all that rapport, everything like that. That was wonderful. And then, you know, add in the fact that Foles had that little pump fake, little escape Wentz play where he looked a little bit like Carson. Man,
yeah,
it was a fun day for Wentz. Or excuse me, it was a fun day for Foles. I'm already conflating the two. Yeah, how about that? I also think it was nice to see Ajayi receive the amount of attention that he did. Ajayi, the clear leader in carries with 12. Next closest was Blunt with 7. Now, yards per carry for Ajayi was just a touch over 4, which is lower for him than is typical, right? Which is, you know, that, you wonder about that. But he got to, I think, be a bit more of a grinder, a bit more of a bell cow than he's used to being, than he has been here with his time in Philadelphia, which is nice. Big one for me is the 2 longest offensive plays for Philadelphia both came from Ajayi. 32-yard reception on a screen, 22-yard run as well. Those 2 plays back to back. That was a 54-yard chunk of 2 plays. That's awesome. That's fantastic production from Ajayi. You get to grind him, and then he can pull out 2 big plays for you like that. That's really, really good. You don't really want your offense running through the quarterback as much. Obviously, they ran it through the quarterback just fine, but you expect the running backs to shoulder a little bit more of a load. For Ajayi to have those 2 plays really stood out for me as, you know, he's kind of taking a step up there.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And just going back to what I had said previously, 66% in the red zone, we were 67.39 coming into today. So moving on to some more of the defensive side of the football type stuff. As the game went on, Brandon Graham started to come on. I realized that we got gashed in the passing game a little bit, but considering to what we were saying about Brandon Graham coming into the season, about his performance, even early in the season where some of his sacks were in garbage time and whatnot, he has come up big in big time situations. Fletcher Cox was getting there. I mean, this defensive line, after the Giants got their first 20 points, they were bumping, and really the Giants couldn't do much about it. What did you think about Brandon Graham? What did you think about the interior of the line during this game?
It'll start with one of the items that I forgot in my earlier rant about Eagle team overreactions. No pass rush is ever going to look productive against the New York Giants
because they get rid of the ball so quick. Yeah,
I mean, sure, like Ziggy Ansah had 3 sacks that one Lions Detroit, I think it was a Sunday night game, where he was violating Eric Flowers on national television. It should have been censored content. It was absurd.
Yeah,
right,
they had no answer for him.
But if the Giants are going to be stupid and let Eli stay in the pocket, that's going to happen. I would go so far as to say that I don't think Eli was in the pocket for more than 2.75 seconds on any snap, on any passing snap. I would go to the bank with that. Obviously, you know, we'll go to the all 22 and there'll be a play where he's there for 3 seconds and I'll be wrong. But there was nothing. Your pass rush can barely have an impact on that game. And that's going to be the reality for the Philadelphia defense, especially the 2 worst games Philadelphia's defense has had as a whole have been against the Giants in week 3 and the Giants now. I can guarantee you any team they face from here on out is going to be quick outs. Oakland is very similar. I mean, Carr will stay in the pocket, but they're a dink and dunk sort of offense. They want to get the ball out quickly. They're okay with short yardage gains and yak situations. That's the way they like to do it. Pass rush, you know, if we talk about Brandon Graham being a guy who has a lot of pressures but few sacks, and you don't really see his impact in the box score, let's extrapolate that to the entire defensive line. They're just scary enough that they have such an impact on game plan that even if they don't show up in the box score, this front four is still dictating how an offense plays every single week. There's no doubt about it. So the pass rush is not overrated. That, you know, I just can't abide by that take. Fletcher Cox causing problems. Timmy Jernigan causing problems. Let's talk about Derek Barnett with another block. I believe he's had multiple blocks so far this year. That was exciting. Kamu Grugier-Hill, special teams. He goes and gets that block. Malcolm Jenkins, a key block, right? So you could say it was a 4-point swing because there's a field goal that was blocked, and then there was an extra point that was blocked. But even on top of that, you know, little hidden points there, Giants went for 2 and failed, where if they had hit that extra point, they would not have had to go for two. So that's another 1 point swing from an extra point they didn't even attempt. That's a 5 point swing in a 5 point game. And so Philadelphia really benefited from that special teams play. Such well-coached units. Chris Wilson, defensive line coach, and then Dave Phipp as well, special teams coach. You know, what a game in which to have three blocked kicks. Like, a huge game for the special teams. You know, we talked about defense needing to step up in the wake of Carson Wentz. It was special teams that really actually picked up the loose slack there, which was really, really impressive.
And like we said before, we wanted to see this team in four quarter games, and we did, and we ended up pulling it out. Eli overthrows Evan Engram on fourth down. Good coverage on that one. I thought the defense really stepped up. The personal foul on Bradham was a little bit weird. He was holding the ankle of Vereen, and the Vereen shoved him in the face.
Don't get me started on that. like they're like, you know, like I we try to talk about not getting frustrated. The one thing that frustrates me more than anything else when refs can't get personal foul penalties right. Right, yeah. If it happens behind you, that's one thing, right? You come by, you can't call anything. What is your staring at the play? He shoved him in the face. You'll be like, oh my god! Like, if he retaliates, I'll fight that guy. You're an idiot. Sorry.
Yeah, and apparently it was initially for grabbing his ankle, and I guess he started the whole thing. I don't care about that. I mean, Vereen shoved him in the face too. For that not to be offsetting is a little bit a weird to me. But either way, we get past it. We don't blame the refs for putting us in bad situations. We blame ourselves. That's how it works here on LOE, or as you may call it, Locked On Eagles. Since apparently RPO needs to be explained to me every other second on the broadcast as a run pass option, and every play action play is apparently a run pass option. Ben, how frustrated were you listening? Do you listen to the actual broadcast? Do you listen to those guys?
I need something to complain about during the game, Mike. So yes, I do.
I was beyond, like, I've actually downloaded a bunch of college playbooks with RPOs installed into them, so I can really break down to a more granular level the run pass options that we have, what they entail, what is, what isn't. Because if I have to do this for another 2 to 3 years with the NFL, explaining to you using the abbreviation RPO and then using the term run pass option, do one or the other. Do one or the other, and we'll just learn it that way. Stop explaining to me what an RPO is. I know what it is. I know what it is. I know what the Eagles run. We've run it 150 times this year coming into this game. Stop talking to me like I'm stupid. Anyway.
No, I very much enjoy being told every single week how complex the Eagles offense is. Because, like, North Texas was running those concepts 5 years ago.
Exactly. Those are, like, the playbooks that I'm downloading. Like, high school teams do these concepts. It's this crazy complex thing. Lower-level football teams use this concept. And it's crazy to me that we have to be talked to like children. I'll broadcast. Anyway, moving on. We are on to Oakland, man.
Yeah, Monday night.
We are recording before the Oakland-Dallas game. So that is something that we're going to be talking about on Tuesday's show. So we apologize for not having any hot takes for you right now. Ben, what do we got for the gentle listeners?
What's up, gentle listeners? Thanks for listening to Locked On Eagles. We really appreciate you spending the time. Remember, I'm Benjamin Solak on Twitter, at Benjamin Solak. It's S-O-L-A-K. My lovely host is Michael Kist NFL on Twitter. That's Michael Kist. Kist is K-I-S-T. Now, looking forward to this week, crossover pod on Wednesday with Locked On Raiders as per usual. Tuesday, we'll be able to get those all 22 Tuesday takes for you. Yes, I said it, which will be a good time. Obviously, focusing on the defense, trying to investigate the play of those cornerbacks, trying to understand that better. And then seeing what was successful with Foles, kind of how the offense changed. You know, they obviously say, oh, we're not going to change the offense. Yes, they did change the offense with Foles at the helm. We'll figure out what that was and why that was. Thursday and Friday, we have a little bit more space than usual because next Monday, a week from today, will be that preview pod for the Raiders because we have them on Monday night. So Thursday and Friday are up in the air. We might have to think of some fun things to do there, Mike. But that's been it. Make sure you're always reviewing, rating, and subscribing on whatever app you listen to this podcast. We really appreciate it. Only 5-star reviews, please and thank you. LockedOnEagles.com is the plug for all of the written content, all of the episodes, share, do all the good stuff. Make sure you leave your Twitter handle whenever you review so that we can give you all the love. I think that's about it, Mike.
Yep. 34-29, the Eagles win and clinch a first round bye. It's been a good day. Close game, close divisional game on the road. We get the W. Keep it locked on here. On Locked On Eagles, fly Eagles fly.